Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Disagreement over a natural gas pipeline in northern BC is again disrupting trade and travel in this country. A key rail line in southern Ontario is still blocked by people showing solidarity for opponents of the Coastal GasLink pipeline that crosses traditional territory of the Wet'suwet'en.
1 year ago this month, RCMP officers raided Wet'suwet'en camps along the route of the $6.6 billion Coastal GasLink pipeline in northern BC. The pipeline plans to transport natural gas through Indigenous territory. The RCMP breached one camp after another along the Morris River Bridge outside Houston, BC. That route is also known as the Highway of Tears because many Indigenous women have gone missing or been murdered along this 725-kilometer stretch of road. The police first raided the camp at the 27 kilometers mark, then the one at 44 kilometers, and finally the one at 66 kilometers, the home of the Unist'ot'en Healing Center. There, the RCMP arrested seven matriarchs gathered around a ceremonial fire, singing and drumming in prayer for those missing and murdered. The Indigenous communities along this route were defying an injunction to not impede the construction of the CGL pipeline, fighting to protect their homeland. Instead, their arrests sparked protests of solidarity from coast to coast to coast.
In Victoria, protesters blocked entrances to the provincial legislature hours before the spring session.
The Mohawk warrior flag waves over the train tracks in Belleville. The Tayendinega Mohawk encampment now effectively disrupting rail service since Thursday.
And in Toronto, they obstructed a major intersection, bringing traffic to a standstill. Via Rail says it's been forced to cancel 157 passengers.
A lot has happened since, but very little has changed. So what happens next? And how do the people of Wet'suwet'en carry on? I'm Fatma Sayed, sitting in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Today we speak to Frida Houston Howlcap. She's a director at the Unist'ot'en Healing Center. A year ago this month, she was one of the seven matriarchs arrested by RCMP police. Hi, Frida. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi.
So this month marks 1 year since the RCMP raided the healing center where you work and sort of sparked protest across the country. I'm hoping you can take us back to that moment and describe how it all started from your perspective.
Well, the hereditary chiefs felt like they weren't being listened to, so they met and made a decision to evict the workers off of the territory. So a letter was drafted up and they all signed it, and I ended up having to be the one to go deliver that letter to the workers. And to our surprise, they listened to the letter and they all left the territory.
What did the letter say?
It just said that we didn't approve of their projects and that they were being evicted off the territory.
And these were the pipeline projects?
Yes. There was a man camp behind our healing center. So that's who we evicted off.
How many people were at the camp a year ago? Like, what was everyone doing just before the RCMP got there?
There was not too many people. There was people that were cooking, keeping the fires going, people running the sacred fire. And we were just continuing on doing everything we do each day to run that space. Because it's a huge facility and we had to keep it running because it was winter, so that everything wouldn't freeze up on us.
Do you remember the moment you saw an RCMP officer sort of enter the space? What were the events like when that happened?
We had a lot of chopper activity, police choppers flying, circling the healing center, circling the area, driving to the back, flying back out on a daily basis leading up to it. And what had happened is after the eviction happened, another camp down the road at 44 kilometer, they ended up having their own plans, and it ended up that we were blocked in, so we couldn't come or go by vehicle. As you've seen on the news, there was like 100 trees across the road. So they ended up having, at kilometer 39, another camp was set up to coordinate supplies in and out to ensure that we had food and everything we needed in order to run our facilities. So people were delivering to 39, and our people had to go down to 44 and walk to 39 and backpack our food and supplies back to 44 and get on a snowmobile and snowmobile back up to 66.
It sounds so orderly when you describe it. Was there panic at all?
I think some people were panicked and some were calm. Some had to be level-headed to ensure that we had everything we need, and especially for if there was a medical emergency, we were thinking about that, making sure we had all the supplies in our medic room. We were fortunate we had a good medic person, because I ended up, my dog got injured and had a big, my dogs got into a fight because they were jealous of each other. And two of them ganged up on my little dog, and she had a big gash on her leg, so we couldn't take her to no vet because we were blocked in. And three of the people's supports that were there, the medic person ended up stitching her. Two people just held her to calm her, and she managed to stitch her up. And the vet was impressed with the work that was done, and she did an amazing job.
You were one of seven people who were arrested back then, according to sort of the stories I've read. And there's some really powerful pictures of you singing by the fire while being arrested, and then continuing to sing as you were taken away by these officers. Tell me about that. What was going through your mind? What were you singing? And how? What was your interaction with the police like?
We were in the middle of a ceremony because we were praying for the murdered and missing women, which happened to be the top thing that was on our mind with the man camps coming in. And we were praying for all our lost women, that no justice has been brought for them that went missing on Highway 16. There's a lot of Wet'suwet'en women that are still missing, and no investigation, nothing's been done. So we were doing prayers for these women and doing a ceremony. And in the middle of our ceremony, they interrupted the ceremony. We didn't finish it. So that was the reason why I continued to sing, because I didn't want to interrupt the ceremony. And then we did get paused for a minute, so I paused after they arrested me and made us wait, and then got us to all sign papers before they put us into that bun wagon. But once they put me back into the bun wagon, I started singing again, because the bun wagon was parked right where we were doing the summer ceremony. So even though the fire, they destroyed the fire, they picked it up. They used a big machine and just grabbed the fire, picked it up, and were throwing it into the river. That's how disrespectful they were. And because they were being so disrespectful, I was in tears, singing, continuing to sing for the ceremony that we were doing.
Did they tell you why they were arresting you?
They said we're breaching the injunction, and the funny thing is we received a letter from CGL saying there was no more work back there and they wouldn't be working. So I gave that email to the police and told them, you say you're enforcing injunction. CGL is not working. What are you enforcing? That's what I was asking them. But they refused to take the letter. So I just flung it at them because I was annoyed that they were interrupting our ceremony. So I flung that email at them, and I think it was my niece that picked it up and tucked it into the police officer's vest and said, read it.
And you said, you know, that there was a brief moment of pause. Did they arrest everyone that was around that fire pit then? And did sort of, you know, the singing have to and the prayers have to stop momentarily while this was going on?
I think I was the last person to be arrested. So I believe the rest were still singing, even though they were arrested at the spot where they were at. They continued to sing because I continued to sing because I was the last one. I think originally they tried to take me and then they didn't. And then I was the last person they took.
Where did they take you, Frida?
They just took us right to the front of our driveway to the healing center because originally when we were singing, there were police camped across the river and there was police across the bridge and then there was police behind us. The militarized police, they probably got flown in the day before, or I'm not sure, but because we didn't hear any chopper activity that morning and yet they were all up there on snowmobiles. So perhaps they got brought to man camp, stayed there and snowmobiled down behind us. They took us to the front of our healing center and we had to wait there for processing. And then they started getting us to sign papers and then put us into the bun wagon one at a time. And it took like 4-5 hours before they got us all into the bun wagon.
And where did they take you from there?
They took us to the police station in Houston.
How many days were you put in imprisonment, if at all?
I think it was just we were in the bun wagon for 5-6 hours and we were in the cell for another hour or two.
It's interesting because there was so much coverage of the events that you're describing. And I can't imagine going through something like that. Did sort of getting arrested, did that change your perspective at all on the relationship between your community or you know, other Indigenous communities across the country and the police and just regular Canadians as well?
It just was encouraging to see that other Indigenous people right across Canada could relate to what we were going through. And because they could relate, they all stood up in their own lands in protest of what had happened, of how we were forcibly removed off of our own lands to benefit industry, even though they don't have proper consent. They never got permission from our people and chose to go to people that don't have the right to make decision on our territories, and they go with the yes people.
You know, looking back today to, you know, all those protests, do you think they changed anything? Do you think they changed the conversation at the very least?
It seemed to get the province to speak to the chiefs, but it didn't change the situation with us not approving of pipelines, like the destructive industries. We don't agree with those, but we're still being ignored and they're still working as usual. And even with COVID happening, we've all been prevented from gathering. We can't even host our feasts. We can't even host funerals properly. We can't even be there for each other according to where our custom is. We hold each other up when we lose people, and we can't even do these things. Yet industry can still work business as usual during COVID because they consider that critical infrastructure. So it shows the imbalance that we're living in. And until that imbalance changes, people have no hope for what's happening on this earth. We're running out of clean water. We're running out of clean air. And people need to be aware of that. And I know as Indigenous people, we are taught from a very young age how to care for the land. And that's why you saw the actions all across Canada, because Indigenous people, that's just our way of life. we don't have to learn it today because it's taught to us at a very young age. You only take what you need and you have to give back. You can't just keep take, take, take. If you keep take, 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 then the box is going to end up empty. And what will you have left to take?
In the years since, what has happened with your land? Has there been actual development of the Coast GasLink pipeline?
The only thing that they've put up is their man camps. And we took legal action, which stopped them from adding any more to the man camp they erected on Unist'ot'en territory. And during the legal process, our lawyers advised us to attempt a mitigation route with the industry to ensure they don't damage our lands. And if that didn't work, then we can go back to court. That's the advice legal gave us. So right now we're still in the legal process, but we've since hired a mediator because we refuse to speak to industry because they keep saying that they're we're consenting with them. Thank you for that meeting and with consultation, they're saying. And so we just refuse to talk to them and have a mediator that was hired from industry to be the person that's going to speak to them and speak to us, because that's the only person we chose to speak to.
You know, the protest when they first started seemed to be such a powerful and strong and extremely loud message of solidarity. I'm curious if you think there is an opportunity for dialogue after everything that's happened between Indigenous communities and institutions, whether it is the police or the government or industry, who are trying to develop, you know, Indigenous people's lands. Is there room for constructive conversation, Frida?
I think it's almost like a marriage relationship. I'll use that as an example. So if one party is abusing their power and doing things to you that make you feel oppressed and unhappy, and then you say, communicate with them, the communication's not going to work unless the other party turns away from their wrongdoing and agrees to meet you at your level and treat you like you're a human being and treat you like what you say matters. That's when conversations can begin. But right now they keep saying they don't see an issue. They keep saying there's reconciliation, but really there isn't. Because right now you have a power that's overpowering other people and not listening to their voice. So like in a marriage, if that continues, then that's why you have so much divorce around the world, because that's the same principle, that leadership needs to listen to the people. Especially Indigenous people, because we've already been taught how to take care of the land, how to only take what we need, instead of greed is the number one thing that has taken over a lot of people. Like, enough is not enough. They always want more, 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 because they're not happy with, even though they have what they have to sustain them, they want more. So unless that mentality changes, that's the only way we're going to see change.
Have you had any interactions with the police since being arrested a year ago? And if you have, what have they been like?
Just trying to think back. The police are still have a heavy presence on the territory. There have been few instances where we were having our healing camps. We were having a medicine camp with the elders, and because of COVID, we had such a small group. So we had a knowledge share camp where elders were brought out and they were teaching their knowledge, and I was teaching them some new knowledge of how to make salves. So we were doing, when we went out to go harvest, because there was workers beyond where we harvest the certain medicines we were harvesting that day. So we were busy harvesting and we're all parked on the side of the road, and then all of a sudden the police drove by. So they drove by, and then we continued on with our harvesting, and I think we were having lunch. By the time they came back, we were having a lunch break and all standing around talking and eating our lunch. And they drove by again, and the elders were so upset that they were invading our space where we're doing a sacred thing of picking medicines, and they treat us like we're criminals on our own land, they were saying, and this is our land, and this is what we do, this is our practice. And she said that they were upset that, we were being monitored and followed on our own lands, trying to practice our own traditions. And that still continues whenever we try to do patrols or go drive through and investigate what kind of animal activity we see back there to see if they are still there. And with all that industry traffic, we just had closed off hunting for 4 years and had a lot of moose behind the gate at our 66 bridge. And since the man camp and industry have been going in and out, we haven't seen much moose anymore. So all that work we did for 4 years to try and restore the moose population, now we don't see any moose because the noise of industry has pushed them out, so we didn't get any moose this year.
It really sounds that very little has changed. You said before that if we don't stop the pipeline, there'll be no hope for the future. The RCMP presence is still very strongly visible in your lands. What helps you keep hope in this time?
It's my prayers. I have a strong belief, and I'm strong spiritually, and that's what's carried me for the last 10 years is because I pray. I rely on a higher power than myself. So now I've been offering a lot of prayers for industry, and as the way my niece puts it, my niece is only 5 years old, and she was heartbroken when all this stuff was happening and when she had to leave because we were worried the ministry was going to take her. And she said, maybe those guys don't have moms. The moms teach you how to be nice and how to care for things. So maybe they got no moms, why they're so mean and why they're doing the things they do. And this is coming from a little girl that's only 5 years old. And it has so much truth to it. So now I'm focusing on my prayers, praying even for the people that are doing bad to my people. I'm praying for them to change their hearts, to change their minds, to help them see what they're doing is wrong. And that they would be able to see that it's best to do sustainable industries so that our children and grandchildren don't live with the after effects down the road. That they don't just keep looking at the now, that they would look to the future. Because they say the root of all evil is the love of money. And that's what the evil is right now. But everybody is pursuing money. They don't care about anything else. And they're very selfish and self-centered. So that's how I've been praying for people to quit being selfish and to start caring for what's going to happen in the future. Unless people start to care, nothing's going to change. And we can't just depend on leaders to do that. We as people have our own minds that can decide what we do, when we do it, how we do it. Indigenous people aren't the only ones that can make change. We shouldn't be the only ones concerned about the future. We shouldn't be the only ones concerned about the land. It should be everybody's concern. And that's the only way it's going to change, when more and more people have concern and make some concerted efforts to make change.
Frida, when you were arrested a year ago, you were making a prayer for the missing and murdered Indigenous women who we're still seeking justice for and looking for answers. Would you be willing to share a prayer with us now?
Sure. Creator, we thank you that you're always here, you're always present, you're all-seeing, all-knowing. And we just pray for all the women that haven't received justice, that are missing. Because your word says that if the darkness is exposed into the light, and then we'll find our answer. I pray that all that darkness be exposed into the light so that families can get peace and find out where their children are. We ask for your help, for you are the all-knowing, all-seeing. You know where these women are. We just pray, even if people are hiking, that they would be able to find the remains of our missing women. And we just even pray for people that are doing the investigating, that you give them a clear mind, soften their heart to have compassion for our women that are missing. We thank you for this.
That was Frida Hewson, a director at the Udistoten Healing Center. And that was The Big Story. You can find more at thebigstorypodcast.ca. If you want to send us a message, you can find us on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. You can also email us, thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. I'm Fatma Sayed. Thanks for listening.